tonight, the airstrike on Syria. President Trump declares mission accomplished, but the chemical threat remains, and one official says the U.S. is locked and loaded to strike again. The other battlefield.
The Russians are engaging in information warfare.
As a war of words heats up, we go inside our country's effort to fight Russian disinformation. Terrifying moments as a tornado tears a community apart, and it's far from the only severe weather being felt this weekend by millions. Police work turns from dangerous to hazardous. The opioid crisis now threatening officers dealing with suspects carrying deadly drugs.
This is NBC Nightly News with Jose Diaz-Balart.
Good evening. The president called it a perfectly executed mission after U.S. and allied missiles took out three alleged Syrian chemical weapons sites last night. The United States, Britain, and France launched the attack almost a week after horrifying images emerged of men, women, and children who were killed in an apparent poison gas attack. This message to the Syrian dictator and his allies, Russia and Iran, may not be the final word. The American ambassador to the United Nations today warning that if another chemical attack occurs, the U.S. is, quote, locked and loaded to respond again. We have team coverage from around the world and begin tonight with Bill Neely, who is less than 2 hours outside Damascus. Bill.
Good evening, Jose. Exactly a week ago, a poison gas attack killed dozens of Syrian civilians. This morning, in response, dozens of missiles rained down on Damascus, just 50 miles from here. The airstrikes were a one-off, says the U.S., and no Russian soldiers were engaged. But this chemical crisis may not be over. From a U.S. warship, one of 105 missiles fired through the night into Syria. All targeted at alleged chemical weapons facilities. The Syrians fired and shot down nothing. The U.S. claiming every weapon reached its target. 76 missiles made this rubble. It was a chemical weapons research center near the capital. In all three main targets, three words used to sum up the strikes.
Precise, overwhelming, and effective.
Syria's chemical program, he said, set back years. Syria's President Assad appeared to take it in his stride, walking to work this morning. Defiant supporters outside, the U.S. now threatening him again.
I spoke to the president this morning. And he said if the Syrian regime uses this poisonous gas again, the United States is locked and loaded.
Russia said the strikes were an act of aggression, but Russia's guns in Syria were silent, its troops unharmed, direct conflict with the U.S. avoided, at least for now. Unclear tonight how much of Syria's chemicals and its intent to use them has been destroyed. Bill Neely, NBC News, Beirut.
I'm Kelly O'Donnell at the White House. On this day after the airstrikes, the Trump administration unleashed a round of fresh warnings.
Chemical weapons are a threat to us all.
From the United Nations Security Council.
When our president draws a red line, our president enforces the red line.
To a summit in Peru, where Mike Pence filled in for the president and justified the use of force as
the morally right act to take.
The vice president thanked other leaders today for supporting action to deter Syria, and Pence called out Iran and Russia as patrons of the dangerous Assad regime.
Our message to Russia is you're on the wrong side of history. That it's time for Russia to get the message that President Trump delivered last night. That you're known by the company you keep.
Today, the president was visible only on Twitter, where he called the action a perfectly executed strike, thanking his counterparts in France and the United Kingdom for their wisdom. Though the administration says it is prepared for a sustained effort, President Trump declared mission accomplished. Two words that backfired on George W. Bush in 2003 after Baghdad fell, but the Iraq War was far from over. Today, the Pentagon provided new details about the Syria operation and its targets, making public additional images of the firepower deployed by air and sea. Officials assess that most, But not all of Syria's chemical weapons capability has been degraded.
There's still a residual element of the Syrian program that's out there. I believe that we took the heart of it out.
Today, President Trump spoke with France's Emmanuel Macron and Britain's Theresa May. Their partnership on this is notable because they agreed on a coordinated military response within a week of the original chemical attack. Now, officials say the policy toward Syria is unchanged. They are not trying to depose Assad, but to deter him from using these banned weapons again. Jose?
Kelly O'Donnell at the White House, thank you. Now, while Russia did not deploy any of its air defenses during the attack on Syria, the Russians did have strong words. President Vladimir Putin condemning the attack in the most serious of terms, as he put it. NBC's Kelly Kobieya is in Moscow with more on Russia's response. Kelly.
Jose, good evening. Well, no more talk of war with the West here in Russia, but Russia isn't backing down either. Plenty of verbal salvos flying today. Some officials calling these strikes lawless, unacceptable. President Putin accusing the United States of aggravating the humanitarian situation in Syria. And Putin also still standing by Assad, despite those words from President Trump, also still claiming that that gas attack in Douma didn't happen. Now, Russia had trouble building any sort of support for a UN resolution condemning the airstrikes, but in a sense, this is still a win for Russia. The U.S. steered clear of Russian assets in Syria, also steered clear of the Syrian Air Force. And what does that mean for Russia? Well, they avoid a confrontation militarily with the West for now over Syria, and they can refocus on the big prize for them, which is keeping Assad in power and building up their own power base in the Middle East. Jose?
Kelly Kobieya in Moscow, thank you. The Pentagon said Russia has ramped up a disinformation campaign about the airstrikes in Syria, claiming there has been a 2,000% increase in Russian trolls over the last day or so. This is just the latest front in an information war between the U.S. and Russia. NBC's Ken Delanian got a look inside the American efforts to combat Russian propaganda.
The hottest front line in the conflict between the U.S. and Russia may not be in Syria. It's a war of words over what's fact.
Real news, not fake news.
And what's fiction.
Roll Amphetamine Music 4, camera 1.
The American combatants.
Roll 12.
Battling in a tiny part of the U.S. government that tries to call out Russian misinformation.
The Russians are engaging in information warfare. They're telling lies, and we're confronting them toe-to-toe with fact-based, truthful, professional journalism.
So this is it, polygraph.info.
Former Dallas TV reporter Jim Fry runs a U.S. government-funded website devoted to fact-checking Russia. Polygraph.info, billed as disinformation news.
What our reporters do every day is they begin the day looking at Russian media.
When Vladimir Putin unveiled a new and supposedly invincible missile, an animation seemed to show the missile striking Florida. The Kremlin denied that, but...
We fact-checked that, and we showed a map of Florida and what they were showing. It was pretty obvious to any viewer.
Polygraph challenged Russia's denial that the nerve agent used to poison a former spy in the UK was made only in Russia. It also challenged Russia's assertion that no chemical attack took place this month in Syria. Polygraph is a year-old joint venture of the Voice of America and Radio Liberty, originally Cold War-era news organizations funded by, but independent of, the federal government.
All right, broadcasting live direct from our studios in Moscow.
Hoping to counter the Russian government's English-language news channel, RT, the U.S. agency that runs those operations also launched Current Time, a 24-hour Russian-language network seen in 30 countries. The channel is overseen by Irina Van Dusen, who got her journalism degree in Moscow and grew up surrounded by Soviet disinformation.
There are facts, there is truth, and we have to deliver that.
Despite these efforts, the U.S. remains badly outgunned in the information war, with its most powerful weapon, President Trump, only now starting to use tougher words about Russia. Ken Delanian, NBC News, Washington.
We are watching all kinds of wild weather playing out across the country tonight, from tornadoes to snowstorms to more unusually warm weather in the east. NBC's Maya Rodriguez has been following it all and has our report.
Oh my God!
Moments of terror in the town of Mountainburg, Arkansas.
Oh my God.
As a massive tornado yesterday uprooted trees and upended lives.
It was very scary.
Tammy Heister barely had time to get her sister and dogs to safety. Today, the cleanup. County officials say the twister damaged 160 structures and injured four people.
It didn't hit me until this morning when I woke up, and it was like, oh, I just lived through something I probably shouldn't have.
All day, storms hit the southeast. In Louisiana, a two-year-old girl died after a tree fell on her family's RV. And throughout the plains, blizzard warnings. In Minnesota, the snow is piling up. In western Nebraska, the storm sidelined more than 100 motorists. Meanwhile, in northwestern Oklahoma, evacuations underway because of these wildfires that have already killed one firefighter. And out east, weather whiplash. At New York's Rockefeller Center, temperatures in the high 70s. Back in Arkansas, Tammy Heister knows the cleanup and rebuilding could take weeks.
How do you pick up after something like this?
Just keep pushing forward.
Pushing forward in the hopes of coming back stronger. Maya Rodriguez, NBC News, Mountain Burg, Arkansas.
As the opioid crisis grips America, first responders on the front lines are increasingly at risk of injury from the deadly drugs. Tonight, new body cam video reveals one officer's struggle with a sudden illness following an interaction with a suspect. NBC's Matt Bradley has the story.
I'm going to take your hand. I'm going to handcuff you.
On the front lines of America's war on opioids.
151, send us a 24, possible overdose.
Okay. It's the rescuers who now need rescuing.
What is that? What is that that you have?
Body camera footage released this week by Columbus, Ohio police shows an officer struck by an unknown illness after an arrest.
It's for an officer, possible exposure to fentanyl or something.
His fellow officers give him Narcan, the opioid antidote that's becoming a crucial weapon in the police arsenal.
151, Narcan administered.
He's not the first responder to face accidental overdose. Another Ohio officer almost died last year, suspected of absorbing fentanyl through his skin. Skin contact with as little as 2 milligrams can deliver a lethal dose. The DEA says synthetic opioids like fentanyl are 30 to 50 times more powerful than heroin.
Oh, I felt like rubber. My whole body just went down.
This officer is recovering. So far, no emergency workers have been accidentally killed by opioids, but first responders are increasingly unwitting victims. Matt Bradley, NBC News.
This week's appearances by Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg in the House and the Senate were revealing. Many who watched were surprised to see how very little members of Congress seem to know about the social network, despite its central role in most Americans' lives. But not all in Congress are clueless. Katie Beck is covering the midterm elections for us and met a candidate who has seemingly figured it out.
A Democrat hasn't won statewide victory in the Lone Star State in more than two decades.
Do you feel like an underdog in this race?
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Democratic Congressman Beto O'Rourke is drawing big crowds and raising big money in his campaign for Senate. $6.7 million in the first quarter, outraising incumbent Ted Cruz at every turn. The campaign credits O'Rourke's digital game. They say he's mastered using social media to connect and collect.
Hey, hope everyone's having a great day. We are on our way to Laredo.
Live streaming his campaign journey on Facebook, making voters feel part of it with clever calls for contributions, like the matching amount it costs to fill up his tank.
So if you can contribute $49.46.
So many people made exactly that donation because they literally have been with us as we've been traveling from town to town.
John Wunderlich runs a government accountability nonprofit. He says fundraising on social media, the new norm.
It's become a very important part of the competitive landscape.
In 2015, Republican Senator Rand Paul got attention when he broadcast a whole day on the trail. And New York gubernatorial candidate Cynthia Nixon's used Twitter to ask for donations to boost her efforts to legalize marijuana.
If your message resonates, it can go from a few thousand people to maybe a few tens or 100,000 people very quickly.
O'Rourke's campaign is trying to beat the odds.
It's as transparent, it's as honest as I know how to be on the campaign trail.
Hoping its aggressive use of the social network will pay off on election night. Katie Beck, NBC News, Atlanta.
Still ahead tonight, giving young kids freedom to be more independent. The state passes a law giving parents more leeway. We are back with a question getting a lot of attention these days. How much freedom to give younger children and at what age? Utah has just become the first state to legalize so-called free-range parenting, and other states are considering the idea. But how can parents tell where to draw the line? Our Kristen Dahlgren has more.
Come on, guys.
Busy mom Julie Gunlock's been giving her sons, Jack, Henry, and Will,
wait, there's a car, Willie,
more chances to explore on their own.
I want them to be able to roam around the neighborhood, walk to a park that they want to go to.
The boys are 11, 9, and 7, and Julie considers herself a so-called free-range parent.
The thing that I worry about is not that they're in danger. I worry that someone will see them walking and say, oh, this isn't good, and they'll call the police.
Proponents of free-range parenting say giving kids independence helps boost their confidence. But critics say it can expose children to serious dangers. In Virginia, where Julie and her kids live, guidance is on a case-by-case basis. Elsewhere, the rules vary widely. In Illinois, children under 14 can't be left without supervision for an unreasonable period of time. In Oregon, it's age 10. And in Maryland, a child must be at least 8 to stay alone in a house or car. These Maryland parents were investigated and later cleared by child welfare authorities for letting their 10 and 6-year-old walk home alone from a park in 2015.
Some things that are not neglect.
Utah's new law aims to legalize more leeway for parents. It takes effect next month and says well-cared-for children can travel to school, explore a playground, or stay in the car alone if they're mature enough to handle it.
Every child is different.
Child psychiatrist Dr. Helen Egger says balance is key.
It is certainly important to give children opportunity to learn and to be free. On the other hand, if you take it to an extreme, then children really can not only feel neglected, but could be neglected.
Back in Virginia, the Gunlock boys say they're getting a lot more than just freedom.
How proud, Henry, are you when you get home after doing something by yourself?
I feel good, to be honest, really good.
Come on, Jack.
As parents and lawmakers are increasingly forced to decide just how free kids should be. Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News, Alexandria, Virginia.
And up next, remembering a broadcasting original whose passion was out of this world. And Art Bell has died. You may have listened to him on the radio, especially if you're into the paranormal or the supernatural. Bell's nationally syndicated program, Coast to Coast AM, was the place to call in with things like this.
I am the six-fingered alien hybrid.
Cool.
You.
From strange creatures to sightings of UFOs, nothing was too outlandish for the show. Art Bell was 72 years old. And that's NBC Nightly News for this Saturday. Tomorrow on Nightly News with Kate Snow, a remarkable rescue story you will not want to miss. I'm Jose Diaz-Balart reporting from New York. Thank you for the privilege of your time, and good night.